As sports history fans, we often reminisce about the legends. Willis Reed limping on to the NBA Finals court, Curt Schilling's bloody sock, Kerry Strug's courageous dismount, and so many more. These moments often define sports history. But what about the countless injuries that did not become legends, or careers that were derailed due to inadequate care? That's where this episode's sponsor comes in. Introducing to you, ILP Sports Consultants, your trusted sports injury partner, available 24/7. Brian Maielli at ILP Sports Consultants has over 20 years of experience in the orthopedic and sports medicine industry, and he has worked with athletes across the gamut, from youth to amateurs, professionals, in almost every sport played in the United States of America, accommodating athletes at every stage of their career. This adaptability ensures that ILP services are perfectly tailored to your skill level, no matter where you are in your athletic journey. With ILP, you are in control. Choose the steps that matter most to you: diagnosis, treatment plan, recovery, or the whole journey. ILP services are tailored to your unique needs. Rushing for care is a common pitfall, leading to future problems. ILP Sports Consultants helps you make the right decisions, ensuring that you receive timely and safe care. And here's a bonus. Brian hosts the Injured List podcast, sharing insights and athlete stories you won't want to miss. Whether you're a concerned parent or grandparent, or an athlete yourself seeking guidance, ILP Sports Consultants is your beacon of hope in sports injury management. Visit ilpsports.com today. That's the letters ilpsports.com. ILP Sports Consultants, where your well-being is the priority and your recovery is the mission. Choose ILP Sports Consultants for a healthier sports journey, helping you get back in the game the smart way.
One thing for sure I can tell you, you know we're going to have a great show when we're mentioning names like Walter Camp, Amos Alonzo Stagg, Sid Gilman, and the Steel Curtain Defense. We're mentioning them all on your football history headlines for January 7th, coming up in just a moment. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're broadcasting from the Pig Pen in Western Pennsylvania, bringing you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So, with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines. Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and I'm welcoming you once again into the Pig Pen, where we'll go over the great football history for the date of January 7th, and we'll also talk about the great birthdays of the Hall of Fame legends that were born on this day. But first, we're going to start off with your football history headlines, and we're going to go to one of the names that I told you about in the intro, Walter Camp. On January 7th, 1899, Mr. Camp started publishing his first All-American football team in Collier's Magazine. Might be a little biased because 12 of the 13 players were from the Ivy League schools. The sole exception was Isaac Seneca, a Native American who played the fullback position for the Carlisle Indian Industrial School. Camp, along with Casper Whitney, started publishing the Otter in 1889 in a magazine called The Week's Sport. And then in Harper's Weekly, per Britannica.com, or a few years before moving to Collier's. 1899 was the first year the Collier's received the honor of the publication, and Camp and them would carry on the tradition every year until Camp's untimely death in 1925. The magazine then asked Grantland Rice, the era's most prominent sports writer, continued the annual selection, and he did so graciously, just like Walter Camp. Now we move to more modern times. January 7th, 1961, the Orange Bowl in Miami, Florida. The first NFL playoff bowl was played between the Detroit Lions and the Cleveland Browns. According to the AmericanFootball.Fandom.com website, the game was officially named the Burt Bell Benefit Bowl, and it was created to determine the third-place finisher in the NFL as it pitted the two losing teams from the divisional playoff games. And I want you to just try to say Burt Bell Benefit Bowl three times real fast. Let's get back to the game. It was played 10 different times from 1960 through the 1969 season. The name was in honor of the late Burt Bell, who was the former NFL commissioner and co-founder of the Philadelphia Eagles and former co-owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers. The game was developed to give the NFL more television airtime to compete with the AFL. The American Football League had a contract with ABC to air most of their regular season games as well as its postseason. The more established NFL was lagging behind a rival league as very few regular season games were on national television broadcast at that time, and only the NFL Championship game was on during the postseason contests shown around the country. This new playoff bowl was played the week after the NFL Championship game. In the game itself, the 1961 Detroit Lions beat Cleveland in an exciting one-point game, 17-16, to claim third place in the pecking order for the 1960 NFL season. January 7, 1962, at Balboa Stadium in San Diego, the inaugural AFL All-Star Game was played. The contest pitted the best from the AFL's Western Division against the greats from the AFL's Eastern Division. The story of the game is nicely told on RememberTheAFL.com. Players such as Jim Otto, Jack Kemp, and Coach Sid Gilman were on the West sidelines, while the East boasted George Blanda, Billy Cannon, and Gino Cappelletti. The outcome was that the Western Division outshined the Eastern Division 47-27. The MVP of the game was the Dallas Texans quarterback Cotton Davidson. January 7, 1979, at Three River Stadium in Pittsburgh, the AFC Championship game once again came to the home of the Steelers per the ProFootballReference.com website. It was the Houston Oilers, the Steelers' AFC Central rivals, who came to meet the challenge the team of the 1970s on this occasion. It was a very sloppy game for being the two best teams in the AFC, as there were 14 turnovers committed between the two offenses, nine of them against the Oilers. The Steel Curtain defense came to play as they held the Oilers' powerful running back Earl Campbell to only 62 yards rushing and flustered Houston's passing attack to less than 100 yards for a grand total of 142 yards of offensive production on a day for the Oilers. Meanwhile, Terry Bradshaw and company churned out 379 yards as the Steelers defeated the Oilers 34-5 to advance to the Super Bowl. Now let's take a quick break from our headlines and let me remind you, you can learn more about gridiron history on our website, pigskindispatch.com. And you can contact me, Darren Hayes, at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Speaking of hearing from someone who's here, is one of my podcasting partners from the sportshistorynetwork.com that has a message just for you.
Hi, this is John Gidley. Join me each Friday for a trip into the football attic, where I'll delve into forgotten but noteworthy stories of the National Football League. You're bound to learn something new or have your memory jogged each week. That's every Friday, only on the Sports History Network and wherever podcasts are available.
January 7, 1979, at the LA Memorial Coliseum. The NFC Championship game was extremely one-sided as the Dallas Cowboys demolished the Los Angeles Rams 28-0 so that the Cowboys would meet the Steelers in the Super Bowl. We'll save the details for that game in a couple weeks when it comes up in our football history headlines. Then we go to January 7th, 2008, at the Louisiana Superdome in New Orleans. The game was the All-State Sugar Bowl to be played for the 2008 BCS National Championship. The top team in the country, the Ohio State Buckeyes, were challenged with the number two team in the nation, the LSU Tigers, per the AllStateSugarBowl.com website. The game started off strong for Ohio State as they held a 10-3 lead at the end of the first quarter. The Tigers had something else in mind as they then rattled off 21 unanswered points in the second quarter to take the lead that they would not once again relinquish. Louisiana State became the national champs as they stunned the Buckeyes 38-24 at the All-State Sugar Bowl. And since we're talking about national championship college games, let's go to January 7th, 2010. The Rose Bowl in Pasadena, California. The 12th BCS National Championship took place as the Rose Bowl played its turn to host the big game. The number two Texas Longhorns were out for the title against the number one Alabama Crimson Tide. The Bama defense got after it early and knocked Texas star quarterback Colt McCoy out of the game early and then wore the Texas defense down with a strong running game from the tandem of Mark Ingram and Trent Richardson, who each went over 100 yards in the game. The Crimson Tide took home the title as they outlasted Texas 37-21 per ESPN.com. January 7, 2013, at Sun Life Stadium in Miami Gardens. The 15th BCS National Championship was not much of a game at all, as powerful number 2 Alabama outmatched number 1 Notre Dame's Fighting Irish 42-14, per the sportsreference.com website. And it shows that Tide runners TJ Yeldon and Eddie Lacy each went over 100 yards in the romp. Now let's check out your recent memory. January 7th, 2019, Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, California. The national championship game pitted the top two teams in the country once again as the number 2 Clemson Tigers took on number 1 Alabama. CBSSports.com reports that with a strong defense and on the arm of the Tigers' sensational freshman quarterback Trevor Lawrence, who passed for 347 yards and 3 touchdowns to lead Clemson to a dominating claim at the title in a 44-16 shocking victory over Alabama. Now let's get to those birthdays of legends. January 7th, 1884, Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Carlisle's fantastic end, Albert Exendine, was born. Albert played on the all-Native American teams of the Carlisle Institute just after the turn of the 20th century. The National Football Foundation describes how good of an end Exendine truly was. In fact, they quote his coach, the legendary Pop Warner, as calling Albert sheer brilliance on the football field. Albert may have just had his best game of his young career when against the University of Chicago Maroons, he repeatedly stuffed legendary halfback Wally Steffen. Walter Camp in 1907 named Exendine to his All-American team, and just as we learned a little bit earlier in this edition of the Football History Headlines, it was with Collier's Magazine. The NFL voters selected Albert Exendine to enter into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1970. January 7th, 1930, San Rafael, California. Quarterback Eddie LeBaron from the College of the Pacific celebrated his day of birth. Eddie's first year in the gridiron was the last one for the legendary coach Amos Alonzo Stagg. LeBaron played for 3 more seasons after that great experience when Stagg retired and used what he learned well. In 1949, according to the NFL's bio on him, Pacific's offense with Eddie under center was averaging 52 points per game while allowing opponents to average a measly 6 points per game. LeBaron wasn't just good with his Pacific teammates, as shown when he was the most valuable player in the East-West Shrine Game, as well as in 1950 when Eddie quarterbacked the College All-Stars to a 17-7 victory over the champion Philadelphia Eagles. Eddie LeBaron was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame in the year 1980. We thank you once again for joining us and listening to our podcast on a daily basis, and we want to make sure that you join us back tomorrow for the January 8th Football History Headlines and Birthdays of Hall of Fame Legends, as we will go into some great stories that will really make you excited about football history and get ready for those big games. So make sure you join us by hitting the subscribe button on your embed player that you're playing this podcast on, or join us at pigskindispatch.com on a daily time. And if you want to make sure you have a remembrance to do that, you can email us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com, and we'll be sure to send you our daily email out to all of our email subscribers. Just a reminder that you can check out the podcast and the website for the latest articles. You can also find us on the great sportshistorynetwork.com, where with this podcast, and there's 12 other podcasts right now, it's growing all the time, with great sports history in mind, not just football, but you have all sports coming at you, including, you know, boxing, weightlifting, baseball, basketball. There's all kinds of them that you really enjoy with some great hosts, very talented people, and some great guests on those interviews. So make sure you check out the sportshistorynetwork.com. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. pigskindispatch.com. is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Each week, the official Football Learning Academy podcast will take you deep into the history of pro football through interviews with players, coaches, or administrators in the NFL, as well as interviews with Pro Football Hall of Fame selectors, authors, and historians. You'll learn how the game evolved and important moments that shaped the sport into what it is today. And don't miss the Pro Football History Nugget of the Week. Listen to the official Football Learning Academy podcast on the Sports History Network.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcast. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcast. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.